Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's August 7th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
I got a quick news item real quick. We have to move our show to the Google Podcasts Manager from Google Play Music. So I did that last night. I don't know if this affects anybody out there, but people were clamoring for me to get on Google Play with our show, you know. So when I finally did it, now they move us over to Google Podcasts Manager. I don't even know what that is. But they wanted me to shuffle the show over to there, and I did. So that's just a little quick, you know.
Did you actually shuffle it?
Huh?
Did you shuffle it?
Like, yeah, I shuffled. Yeah, I literally shuffled it. So anyway, we're officially on Google Podcasts Manager, apparently. So that's just
a good thing.
So I was shocked late last night. I'm thumbing through Facebook for me to go to bed, and our good friend Joe says he posted this story about Brad Booth. It came off of cardchat.com. Do you remember Brad Booth, Scott? You remember from the high stakes stuff?
Yeah.
Well, apparently Brad Booth's gone missing. He was last seen in Reno in mid-July, like July 13th, at the Grand Sierra Resort Casino in Reno. He's the guy. If people who don't remember who he is, but this might spark it. He was the guy who had the goatee and the dark brown hair, and he was pretty famous for his bluff against Phil Ivey on that show. There was a hand where Ivey had pocket kings. It was crazy. It was a $14,000 three bet preflop, and he had a four deuce of spades. Ivy's got kings. Flop comes 3-6-7 with one spade, and Booth check raised his $23,000 bet all in for $300,000, and Ivy folded. That was it's the highlight of his television career, at least.
Yeah.
But every time he was on, you know, I was like, this is cool. He had this sort of saying where he was up a Ferrari, down a Ferrari. That was like kind of his his thing, if I remember that correctly. Anyway,
I've been up or down a Ferrari in my career yet. So.
Oh, but I mean, he played the Bobby's room. I mean, he played regularly in that 300, 600 no limit game, the 2K, 4K limit game. I mean, he played that forever. But then I think things changed around in his life, and he was saying something about, instead of being up a Ferrari, down a Ferrari, now he's up an 87 Honda Civic with a dent in the front. You know what I mean? So, I mean, he was...
It's more my speed.
Then they said there was stuff where he was loaning money to people and then, you know, and then didn't pay him back and stuff. So there's some stuff going on there. But he's missing. He's been missing for almost a month. And all of his friends are concerned. So, anyway, they put it out on social media and everywhere. And they're saying, if you see him, you know, we don't know where he is. So his mom and all his family are all worried. So, anyway, that was something. I mean, sometimes our show is full of bad news, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, we got more later on, too. Yeah. But it's just kind of amazing to me that somebody could go missing in this day and age with cell phones and
cameras, security cameras.
Really, right? Yeah. So that's what makes this all that more concerning, right? So, yeah. But it does happen. I don't know. It just probably made national news, but we had this mom and daughter here in St. Pete that just vanished. Yeah. They're supposed to get on a plane to Maine and didn't do it. And eventually they tracked them all the way to Kansas, where the mom had a health episode at a convenience store and died on the way to the hospital. It's crazy. Yep, I mean, think about it, right? So, but they were able to track them from cameras and stuff all up until that point. So, I don't know. It's a crazy world. I mean, you know, And not only did I have a cell phone, but, you know, I keep joking, my wife has me on this ankle bracelet, this Life 360 thing that our neighbors and we use, so we can track each other. So I'm like, we always know where everybody is at all times, unless, you know, you turn your phone off, and then it's like, oh my God. So, I don't know. I hope for the best here.
Yeah, me too. I hope he's all right.
Just scary stuff when people go missing this day and age. So,
yeah.
All right, so our last little negative thing here, and maybe we'll have a little bit more fun here. A 60-year-old Michigan man has been arrested in connection with the brutal murder of poker pro Susie Zhao that we talked about in last week's show. Law enforcement authorities say Jeffrey Morris is homeless and has a lengthy criminal record, including a 1989 conviction for rape, and he was denied bond in his initial hearing this week.
Well, if he's the guy who did it, then they'll have some closure for the family, you know, and just justice, hopefully, for her, if this is exactly what happened. It's just scary. And then the way that she was killed is just brutal. Absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
But at least hopefully have some closure here. Hopefully that they got their man.
We'll see.
I like this next item.
Indian online poker room 9Stacks has launched a new voice chat feature available for now in its private games to try to give games more of a home game feel.
I read the story, and it doesn't say that you could talk individually to people, so it has to be, you know, like you're at a table with everyone, and that's...
Yeah, party line.
It's surprising that it took this long for someone to do this.
You know, it does. You know, when I first read it, I was like, this, I mean, this can't be new, can it? And then I started thinking, I'm like, no, I haven't heard of anybody doing this, and I'm like, how is that possible?
I know. It's bizarre.
It just seems like an easy thing to do. Now, of course, I don't know anything about coding poker room, so, you know, I don't know how easy it really is, but it seems like something that should be easy, right?
Yeah, for those geniuses who are making this stuff, they can figure out how to make the mic turn on your device and then highlight your little avatar that shows that you're the one talking or something. I mean, it's smart. I mean, they probably, it's a no-brainer. They probably were looking at a Zoom meeting and watching the people light up for when they talk, or watch them pop on the screen for they're the ones talking or whatever it is, and they're like, why can't we do this in poker? I mean, it's always so funny. It's like when something like this happens and it seems so simple, you always say to yourself, why didn't I think of that? You know what I mean? Yeah. Not that you and I could have said, all right, we've got this great invention, now give us $3 million for this idea. You know what I mean? That's not going to happen. But still, it just seems so obvious, and yet they're the first ones to do it, and it's 2020. It's weird.
Yeah, so a couple things. I mean, one, the article we read on pokerfuse.com, and we only got the top half of it because we didn't pay for the bottom half.
Yeah, right.
So there are some other questions I had that might have been answered in this. But the one thing I think might be interesting, because you're right, it has to be like a party line kind of thing where you're all talking, right? Yeah. So the one thing is, even with Zoom, it's been a little frustrating, is you don't know who's talking. Now, in Zoom, you know, it's video, so you can see the faces, and a little box lights up when they're talking. But if two or more people are talking, both boxes are lit up, right? So other than being able to see mouths moving, you know, it's not always easy to know who's talking, especially if it's a call with people you don't know, right?
Yeah.
Or you don't know the voices. I mean, if it was our home game, right, there's Cassandra going off about the Kentucky Derby again. you know, it'd be no problem, right? But strangers, I don't know who's talking and who's not, right? So I'd be curious at how that looks. Now, of course, that's why it's probably available in the private games now, to get people used to it and used to people with voices they know, right? Rather than before they launch it.
Right.
A bunch of strangers, but that might be kind of one of those things where in theory this sounds fantastic, but in practice it might be a disaster because of that.
Well, it is for private games only, right? So that you'll know,
right,
the people you're playing
right
right now. So down the road when you're playing with strangers, it's gonna have to be a little more refined and, you know, like clear who's talking, or I don't know how you'd stop the two people talking at once stuff. What would be interesting though is if there's only two people left in the hand, then all the other mics would automatically mute, and only the two people remaining can talk. That would be kind of cool.
Oh.
Right?
Well, yeah, that's kind of cool in terms of one player to a hand kind of stuff, right? But in a live game, I mean, if you're having a conversation about the election or something, which you really shouldn't at the poker table, by the way, but it happens, right?
Right.
You know, so now you have to just have that conversation in the... and online in the 10 seconds between hands.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't really know whether that's the solution there. I think you got to keep the mics on. A couple other things too, though. But I mean, one, what if everybody's talking? Which again, it could happen at a table, but you know, I think when you can see people, you pick up on social cues sometimes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how good of a person you are. And you know when to kind of back off on a conversation, or you can tell that other people at the table are uncomfortable with the conversation, so you back off, right?
Right.
You don't have that when there's not a video screen on there. I mean, I think a lot of things we're talking about will be improved if it's not just a chat feature, it's a visual chat feature.
Well, that's the other problem, too, is that when you have that conversation at the table, generally you're turning the person to your right or your left, and your voice is low enough that you're not affecting the other people or they can't really hear you. Here, right. You have no choice but have everyone hear you at once, so you're not going to have that. Hey, Scott, remember the time that we went to the Chinese restaurant and they spelled mobster sauce? And so, I mean, I don't... You know what I mean? So I don't know if that's going to be... You're right. I think there is going to be some problem with it now that we're fleshing it out in the conversation here. But it's still kind of cool to know that you could all get together and just talk and make funny jokes and comments, but you can't stop them from talking when you're playing and just heads up and somebody wants to chime in on what they think you have for a hand. I mean, you're going to have to get them banned from the private room or... You know what I mean? There's all this crap that can happen because you feel pretty safe and isolated in your room. You know, yeah. You're not sitting at a table with people and busting chops, you know, so.
Right.
But it's still a good idea. It just needs to be refined.
Well, the other thing, too, is think about this. I mean, you can mute at home, right?
Yeah.
If the table talk is somebody's annoying or the table talk in general is annoying, there's no reason at home you can't just mute your mic, right? So I think it'd be funny if somebody's trying to talk to you.
Yeah,
you know, like on Zoom, people can say, "Hey, your mic is muted," but here, I mean, maybe there is a way that it, you know, illuminates that so you know somebody is not talking. But if not, I could just see somebody trying to have a conversation, and I'm sitting there playing a game. I have no idea you're trying to talk because I can't see.
Well, they probably will leave the type chat there too, and it'll be like, "Scott, unmute your mic," you know, or
yeah.
But yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I mean, again, there's intriguing possibilities here, but I think I have a lot more questions. So all of our many listeners in India who are playing on 9 stacks, please let us know how this is.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, David Rush of Iowa, who holds more than 150 Guinness World Records. I don't even hold one anymore.
Well, I know.
Added another one to his list when he broke the record for most poker chips stacked by one hand in 30 seconds with 48. The previous record was 42. He said he practiced for more than a year and a half before attempting the record.
Now, I watched the video,
yes.
And I feel like this man is missing out on even... He could probably blow the record away even now if he used a better surface.
I did the same thing.
Yes, he put it on those damn marble, you know, granite countertops or whatever. You know how hard it is to pick up a poker chip off of a hard surface? If he had just used a regular poker table where it's cushioned, he'd go down and grab it definitely. You know, there would be no slippage at all. He'd probably get 50 or 55.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I think I can break this record.
I have a feeling that Cosenza just threw down the gauntlet here.
I don't know. I might look into it. I've got enough chips in the house and I've got a table in the house.
Yeah, if I was you, I'd just throw in sanding it while you do it, too.
That's right. Sand the chips. Make them grippier, of course. I'm actually saddened. I actually got rid of that rig like about a month and a half ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I finally got rid of it.
You could have auctioned that off to the Andy
up here. Well, it was mostly like the... because people don't remember, but I sanded the chips for the cruise, and I used this rig that I made up. It was a long, like, broom pole. And then, like, I put, like, a roller for painting on the end. That was the thing I got rid of, because the roller on the painter eventually got some sticky stuff on it, too much that it wouldn't roll, and so I had to get rid of it. So I threw that out, and then the PVC, I had to use it on something. So I'm like, wow!
It's like the Giving Tree.
Oh, man. Yeah, I should have thought. I should have put it on eBay and tried to raise some more capital for the company, you know?
Yeah.
What was I thinking? Cool.
You weren't thinking so.
I know. Well, I heard.
But you weren't thinking on this though. But yeah, I think it's interesting. I mean, he broke it by 6. So you now you know the guy who had 42 is back at the workshop right now trying to figure out how to get to 50.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And if he's listening to the show, he probably has the information he needs. So
I have to admit that there's a portion of the video at the end where they speed it up to show you because they want to show you all these different angles. They want to show you that it was inside 30 seconds and all that. But when I first tuned into it, I had seen the sped up version. So I was like, holy shit. How fast is this guy doing this? this is incredible. And then I realized it wasn't that fast. But it's still fast. It's just that when he first started, I was like, he's going to put like 12 on here in 30 seconds, but then it actually does go fast. So I think I could beat that record, though. I really do. I think if I had the chips around me and a soft table and I practiced for like a month, I could probably beat that record.
So I think that the challenge is less the speed and more the stacking.
Yes.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yes.
Because you think about it, I mean, normally you stack chips in stacks of 20, right? Especially if you're Matt Savage trying to get poker players to quit being douches at the table. You'd be able to count chips easily, right? So 20 is a good, comfortable number, right? So yeah. It gets above that. Now, you can get up to 40. I've seen people double stack before. But you're also, when you double, you get up to 40, you usually have a couple stacks together. So, I mean, they're not glued together, obviously, but they help support each other, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's not like you have that one stack of 40 that's just flailing in the wind.
Right,
like
right.
Like that thing outside a car dealership, right? but then when you get more than that, then it gets a little bit dicier. You know, it is that Leaning Tower of Chip Pizza.
Yeah.
On its own, and that's not stacking them quickly, right? So then you got to throw in the fact that you're literally stacking them that quickly on top. You don't have time to Jenga the thing up and make it pretty, right? So there is a point of, this is one of those records where I think there's a number at some point that's going to be too hard to beat just because of physics.
Yeah, the physics. And the other thing too that shocked me was when I saw him drop a few, I was like, oh, okay. I thought it was you had to stack them without, but it's not. It's just how many you can stack.
Yeah.
So when they fell off the top or whatever, it was okay. And that kind of threw me for a loop. But I think if you put like a nice solid tile in the middle of a poker table, you know, so that was the base, so that wouldn't be push cushiony, and then you had the chips all around you and the cushiony poker table that it is, I think that, you know, if they were grippy chips, you know, because he also used, it looked like those dice chips, those cheap
ones. Yeah, the little Walmart dice chips.
But if you use the really nice ceramic ones that are kind of worn and, like, from a, you know, everybody's oils are in them from being in a casino for 5 years, those grippy ceramic ones, I mean, I think you can get away with a lot more than he did, and I think you could break that record. I think if somebody wants to be in the Guinness book, they could do it. I think that could be beat. I really do.
Yeah, I will say, as a former Guinness World Record holder,
well, you just love dropping that, don't you?
Of a Guinness World Record, sometimes there are rules that Guinness puts down for every world record attempt, so it's possible that some of the things that you are mentioning may not be allowed. I would doubt it, but it is possible. And you would only know that if you were a Guinness World Record holder.
Yeah, but the term there is were. And I know you're using the subjunctive, but in your case, we're using the actual, you were one, you're not anymore. So stop bringing it up and you won't get made fun of for it.
But no, hey, I'm going to support Chris Cosenza in this. Because here's the one thing, and I'm being half funny and half serious in saying this. When you put your mind to something, Chris, you are laser focused on it.
That's true.
That chip sanding thing, we've been laughing about that, but that's some ingenuity that only comes from someone who is committed to the task, right? So I have a feeling that if you commit yourself to this, you don't need a year and a half, and I'll be there with Genie cheering you in the cheap seats as you I'll run the camera or the clock or something, anything that you need for evidence. As a former world record holder.
Somehow you slipped another one in under the wire there. I didn't think you were going to slip it in, but you did. You got it in there one last time about it. Unbelievable.
Here's this week's update on casinos and poker room reopenings, reclosings. In Nevada, Atlantis Casino Resort and Spa has reopened its poker room. And that's it.
We're getting one a week,
yeah. It's that little drip in the kitchen sink that ends up costing a $300 water bill, right? So just a reminder, antiupmagazine.com/reopen lets verify details on casino poker room reopenings and reclosings. If you have updates, email us at editor@antiupmagazine.com. We are also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at antiupmagazine.com. And I will say our good friends at Atlantis were very excited to get that poker room reopened. So yeah. I was talking to them in the week leading up to it, and, you know, it's good to get back to work, you know. It's tough when you're out of work and not knowing when you can get back. So, and particularly in Reno, when there was another poker room that reopened first. So
Yeah,
you kind of get back in and get back in the game.
Yeah, so give them competition.
Congrats to them, and hope they can stay open, and hope everybody can stay open. It's crazy world still out there.
I agree. Annie Updates, Papes, the Annie Up Fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how you can join can be found at bit.ly/papes, P-A-I-P-S. Games are the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month. Somehow Scott put the word bra in here. I don't know what that is. Scott's preoccupied with the word bra.
I wonder what that bra meant.
It said bra. It said on every bra. I don't know. Every month. And also, they rotate disciplines with the main tournament followed by a second chance event in the same night. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands or ask call the floor questions or just discuss anything in poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at AnnieUpMagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up PokerCast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. And it's another sale, Scott. We have another sale going on.
I'm sorry. No, the
sale's over.
Last 2 weeks you had a sale. I forgot to clean that up.
Sorry. All right, so sale's over.
No sale. No sale for you.
And if you have a hand of the week or a listener spotlight or a call to floor submission, you can email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com, or you can post in the aforementioned Annie Up Fans group on Facebook. So each week we spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we'll do with call to floor and hand of the week, we'll send them something cool. This comes from Rick Barnes, and I have to admit, I got a little verklempt last night reading this.
Big word.
He says, I discovered your PokerCast about a year and a half ago, and as I have said previously, it is the best damn PokerCast in the whole damn world. Although I was a healthy 64-year-old at the time, unfortunately, last fall I came down with a breathing problem, and then he puts in parentheses, cue the violin music, during which I was given an emergency tracheotomy, which kept me in a hospital and nursing home for 6 months. Since then, I have crashed 3 times, but was brought back to life each time. Now he's on a ventilator and trach and cannot speak. Although, like everybody else, I have been restricted to home, I have since learned to walk with a walker and have a wonderful wife who takes care of me. The point is, since then, the PokerCast has been the highlight of my week. No exaggeration. I have tried sampling many other podcasts over the last year, and I still think you are the best. I love the banter, O'Malley's moves, Hand of the Week, and everything else. I look forward to the PokerCast all week. I have listened to all of the previous PokerCasts several times. Luckily, I have the world's worst memory. I have a friend who used to say that he could hide his own Easter eggs. That's pretty funny. As soon as he's able to, he plans on attending one of our cruises. And thanks again for sticking it out, even if it's just once a week.
All right, Chris, still want to quit?
I knew you were going to say that. I was going to say, I guess I'll delay my retirement announcement another week. Because you keep putting these beautiful, wonderful things on here.
Hey, they keep writing them. I keep putting them on the show. So.
I know. Well, I can't tell you, Rick, how much we appreciate that, and we hope that you're doing much better. And we're still putting out the show. We have no idea when we're going to stop. So,
it's just a fantastic thing to read. Yeah. We're just two idiots here talking about chip sanding, but the fact that people at home are listening and not just have it on the background noise, but actually look forward to it every week it means something. It does.
Of course, I can tell him I'm quitting next week. He'll forget anyway.
That's true.
He said he has a world's worst memory. So, Rick, no matter what, you'll be surprised. So, did he listen to all of the shows? I want to know, Rick, you got to tell us. Did you go all the way back to the times and listen to those 500 or so multiple times? Because that's a lot of shows. We've done over 800 shows, right?
Some dedication, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've done almost 1,000 shows, really. That's crazy. Yeah. Wow.
Well, not all of them count as shows, though. I mean, some were pretty bad, but yeah.
It was a bad show, but it was a show. Hey, we got a new O'Malley's move. Here it comes.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we are playing $2, $5 No Limit Hold'em at our regular casino cash game. We bought in for $1,000 and currently sit with $800, down about $200. The blinds post, it's folded to an MP who makes it $20 to go, the standard raise. He seems to be a pretty decent player, but we don't know much about him. He's shown down two hands that were both winners. One was pocket aces, where his opponent flopped top pair and paid him off on the flop and river. The other was pocket jacks, when he stacked an opponent who had ace-king after the flop came king-jack-7. He bought in for 500 and currently has 1100. It's folded to us in the cutoff with the king of clubs, queen of clubs. This is a decent hand, and one I'm not quite sure I'm ready to let go of just yet. We decide to call. The rest of the table folds, and we're going to the flop with about $40 in the pot. The flop is the 10 of hearts, 9 of clubs, 4 of clubs. This is a great flop for our hand. We've got a flush draw and a gut shot straight draw, along with two overs. Our opponent makes a continuation bet of $25. C-betting is pretty standard for this guy. We could raise him here, but I'd like to see what he does on the turn. We make the call. There's about $90 in the pot, and the turn is the 5 of hearts. Once again, our opponent leads out, this time for $75. Typically speaking, in this game, players tend to try to control the pot on the turn. The fact that he's betting here either means that A, he's trying to get an extra street of value out of us, or 2, he's trying to get us to fold. A better player might raise here, but I am not a better player. We call. There's now $240 in the pot, and the river is the king of spades. Our opponent hesitates for a brief moment, fiddles with his chips for a time, and then checks. So, we've rivered top pair. Did we suck out? Is he trying to induce a bet? Is this an obvious check behind? What's the move? I'm all in.
Hey, this is AJ Benz, and you're listening to Annie Up. Same. Ain't it a bitch?
Time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com hand of the week. We're having too much fun today. send your hands or situations to podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Sorry, I just got so lost there in the file. I'm like,
I'm putting a note on here. Edit show at the 22-minute mark. So I don't forget later and leave it in.
I scroll down to the hand of the week, and I scroll past the O'Malley thing, and then you said it, and then I'm like, oh my God, I got to scroll back up because I got to say something. And then as soon as I start talking, I realized I shouldn't be talking.
The worst part is, like, you've pulled back the curtain now and let everyone know that your reaction is not authentic next week because you've already wrote what you want to say about it.
I'm pretty sure that horse has been out of the barn for years on the show, so I don't think anybody's laboring on the assumption that we actually just talk off the cuff, right? So.
You're just killing.
Except when we analyze the hand of the week, like we are for
that's
Ross
right. This is legit. This is legit.
All right, here's what Ross said. Recently rediscovered the podcast after finding you guys were on Spotify. I was like a kid in a sweet shop. Look at that. We're making people happy left and right here.
Well, we're also on the Google Podcast Manager now, too, so we're going to make some other people really happy, apparently.
All right, he said, this is a hand in a $3 9% online sit and go. Six players remaining. Blinds are 61-20. And action folds around to us in the cutoff with two red kings.
Interesting. Basically, the cutoff wants to make sure that they, you know, they raise to get the buttons out so that they can absolutely 100%, you know, be heads up with whoever wants to survive. But you don't need to make it that, you know, I mean, you can just raise the regular amount. You don't have to get crazy here. So I would raise the regular amount and see what happens from there.
Yeah, this is clearly standard. You don't want to tip off the strength of your hand. You want to just do what you normally do in this situation, and that's should be a standard raise, so. All right, our hero says, I start the hand with slightly above average chips at 3,300 and open for my standard 2.5x raise to 300. All right, so far so good.
Yeah, all right.
The button folds, and the small blind, who's the table chip leader with 7,000, makes the call. Despite this player being the overwhelming chip leader, after a couple of early double-ups, he's been limping into almost every pot, so I wouldn't say I've been impressed by his playing style.
Okay.
Big blind, who seems to be a pretty solid player with 1,800 in chips, also makes the call. All right, so three-handed. Flop is 10-9-6 rainbow, and it checks to us.
Okay, so although it's rainbow, it's still pretty coordinated. I mean, people call a raise with 7-8 in blinds all the time. So while they're all undercards and they're rainbow, I still would like to bet enough that these guys aren't just drawn at me for nothing. So you said there's about 900 in the pot, right? Because 300, yeah, about 900. So
yeah, probably exactly 900.
Okay, so let's see, 900 in the pot. I would bet more than half the pot. Probably 500 to 600, maybe.
That sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah, somewhere in there.
Yep. It's exactly what I would do. So let's see. Our hero says, with 900 in the pot, I'm conscious that the flop hits a lot more of my opponent's range than it does my own. And I don't want to allow a free card to more straight outs, so I make it 500. So, all okay. right. So more yeah. than more than half.
Yeah, more than half.
Small blind calls, but the big blind folds. So we're heads up.
Yep, that's good.
Turn is a 7. He says he can't remember the suit, but it completed the rainbow. So all right. So,
no flushes 9, are getting there.
6, 7, no flush possibility, and it checks to us.
Okay, well here's where now it gets complicated. Any 8 now beats us. So and we're never beating them if they have an 8. The check doesn't mean weakness at all, you know, because they called our. Who, if you have this board pretty beat up, who calls? You know what I mean? They might re-raise us, hoping we have a bigger hand. But then check. So if this guy has nothing, he would check. But he also had an 8, he would check. So this is not really telling us anything. But we have to be cautious here. So let's see. There's 1,000 plus a 9, so there's about 1,900 in the pot. And we started with 3,000, and we bet 5. All right, so here's the deal. I don't know how we find out this guy has an 8 without betting, you know, but do you check behind? I don't think you do.
Well, I mean, sometimes these decisions are often difficult because they could go different ways, right?
Right.
This one, it jumped out to me that the what I'd want to do because of that, right, is check behind. Obviously, there's danger in that. There's danger in that a card that maybe we're still ahead right now, but we're giving that free card that's going to hurt us, right? So I would say whether our opponent had the 8 or not, if we check behind, if he's a decent player, he's got to bet into us on the river, right?
Yeah.
He's either got to represent that 8, or if he has the 8, obviously he's not going to take a chance that we're going to check behind again and lose value, right? So I think we like to throw around the word pot control a lot. That's not really what I'm trying to do here, I don't think. But I think a check is the right thing to do, particularly if we're still ahead, because now we're inducing a bet, whereas we may not get called if we bet. And we get some more value out of it. So I think it's both a positive value and a reduction in risk move to check here.
Yeah, because you only have one street now where you have to pay if you lose. Whereas this street, you could bet, he could call, next street he could bet out, and then you're going to feel like, oh, is he just stealing it from me? And then you can put yourself to the test. Then you're going to call, now you've bet two streets that you lost. Whereas I don't think if he doesn't have anything here and you bet, he's going to fold. You know what I mean? I think that you're right. I think maybe a check here. Because let's put it this way. Let's say we bet, and then he calls. And then on the river, he bets. Now we have to call or not, and that's putting us to a test. The other way around, if we check, now he bets, he might have called what we would have bet the last street. You know what I mean? And so now we're just getting away with just doing it to one street. We're changing two bets to one. And it's probably a little more reasonable at the end, too, because then you'll still have that same, 1,900 in the pot. So even if he bets, because he's not going to go crazy and put you all in unless it's just, you know, silly. And you probably would fold that anyway because it's only one pair and you only risked 800 in this pot. But so if he puts a value bet out there of, 600, you can feel comfortable calling that because you might have considered betting that on the turn anyway. So, yeah, I like a check here, but it scares me because if he has something like Queen-Jack and then an 8 comes, or even Jack and an 8 comes, you know what I mean? Now it's like, you know, whatever. But if he has Queen Jack and then a King comes, then we have three Kings and he has that straight, and you're going to feel a little more emboldened with three of a kind. And so, I don't know. It's scary, but I think I agree with you on the check.
Well, yeah, but I mean, there's fear on either action, right? So
yeah.
I think you always got to remember that. So, I mean, I think we tend to get caught up on, when we talk about checking behind, we get caught up in the fear of that free card hurting us. But really, I think my argument was that, you know, if we're already beat, if he already has a straight and we're drawing dead, right? So
yeah.
Betting here and doing what you said, betting here, having him call and then bet out, that's a danger as well, too, right? Because now we've committed more ships than we need to when we're already dead. And if we're already dead, the best outcome is to get as few ships, our ships, back in the pot, right?
Right.
So, and again, I don't necessarily think we are beat right now. So I think the advantage of the check is inducing that bluff on the river, because it's, again, like I said, if no matter what the kind of player is, I mean, you got to take that shot now, right? So if we can get him to bluff with a 10 in his hand, fantastic, right? So
yeah.
So yeah, danger on both sides, but I think I'm pretty confident I'm right on this one.
Right, and I'm glad you brought up the 10, because it seems like we're just so focused on the draw when it could just be this guy has a 10 and he's just calling and hoping that we're just bluffing at it and he's got the better hand, or maybe we have pocket eights and we had raised with pocket eights, because it's shorthanded too. It's a shorthanded table,
yeah.
You know, and we're cut off. We could just be trying to steal and he doesn't believe us with his like jack 10. You know, so
well, yeah. Think about how many times we do the hand of the week here, and we suggest at this point that when a player is raised pre-flop, C bets the flop, and then checks on the turn, we immediately go, oh, ace king, missed it, right?
Right, missed it, floating. The other guy's going to float us too, right?
And that's exactly what we want somebody with an ace 10 here to think, right? So, because we haven't improved, but we haven't missed it. We have a legit hand, right? So,
right.
We have a hand that beats a lot of hands here. So, I feel pretty confident here. I guess I'll probably be proven wrong. But
all right, so we're checking.
I'm checking.
So. Yeah, I'm going to check too.
All right, let's see. Our hero says there's now 1,900 in the pot, and I have 2,500 behind. With four to a straight on the board, I'm now a lot less confident about my kings. I'm conscious that the small blinds range has a lot more eights in it than my opening range. He's also more likely to have a hand like 10-9. Given the stack size, one of my main concerns here was that checking back the turn opened me to being bluff jammed on the river, which I'd have to lay down. After as much thought as allowed in the 15-second bet interval, I bet 800 into the $1,900 pot. Now, I will say before we move on here, the bluff jam is difficult. I admit that. That is a problem with my my plan. But then again, I mean, if your opponent has a straight on the river, is he going to jam it?
Right.
Or is he going to try to get some value out of it? So
right.
If he jams, I know that's difficult and hard because you're playing for all your chips there, but generally speaking, that's a bluff, right? So that he even said his bluff jammed, so, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm less worried about that, but we'll see what happens. All right, the small blind calls. And now the river is a tray, so our final board, 10, 9, 6, 7, tray. And our opponent checks to us.
Oh, I'm checking. Oh, right. Wow, that was great. He checked behind. I mean, he checked. I'm checking behind. I'm not even thinking about it.
Strong hand? Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Christmas in July-ish.
Yep, any eight gives him a straight. He could have been walking the dog, hoping we were confident enough. Maybe he thought, with the way we were betting, that we would bluff at the end if we didn't have anything again, or that we would overvalue our hand. But if he has an eight and we have a set, you know what I mean? He's hoping we'll bet one last time, and there's no way. I'm just checking behind. I'm happy to get out of this for a check behind.
Yep. Okay, our hero says, I'm very relieved to see the check from the small blind. I see no sense in betting the river since I have showdown value with the overpair to the board, but I don't think I get called by anything that I beat if I do bet, so I check. He turns over 4-5 offsuit for a runner straight.
What?
Evan.
Get the hell out of here. All right, we got to relive this hand real quick.
Yeah, this is brutal.
All right, so pre-flop, we raised 2.5. This guy was the small blind, and he has 4-5 offsuit and decides, all right, I'm going to call. This is the guy, he was the chip leader, so he had a bunch of chips. So he was splashing around. He was thinking, okay, maybe the cutoff is just trying to steal blinds here, and it's just a short, you know, six-player sit-and-go left over. So maybe he's thinking, all right, this guy's just trying to steal the blinds. I'm going to defend because I'm a massive chip leader right now. Then the other guy comes around, so that's three players to the flop. Flop is 10-9-6 rainbow, and our guy checks. So we make a reasonable bet, more than half the pot, and this guy with absolutely nothing, 4-5. It's not like he could float us. He's got to reverse float us or whatever because he's acting first.
Yeah.
So he check calls our 500 unit bet, and then he picks up the straight draw. But even then, this straight, I mean, that, I mean, he could have been beat by any eight anyway, and he sticks around. That's just baffling. I don't know how you.
Yeah. So what's frustrating about this is we would have checked behind to give him that free card to get the river, right?
All right.
Our hero Ross here didn't do that. He made him pay for that
card. Still
and he
still
paid for it.
What was he thinking? And then on the river, when he makes his hand, he checks. So you're thinking, like, well, I'm going to try calling this one more time and then bluff into him because I don't believe him. Instead, he makes the hand, he checks. So the guy lost value because if he made some piddly bet, like 500, we would have called. So this guy is, Wow. Now, I guess, what did he say earlier in the description of the guy that he wasn't terribly impressed by him?
Yeah, he doubled up a couple times. That's why he has so many chips. It wasn't that he really earned them.
So. How do you beat somebody like that? Plays 4-5 off for a raise.
Well, you beat them because over the long term, they're going to lose, right? But, yeah, they're going to get those lucky ones. I mean, it'd be nice if they got those lucky ones against somebody other than us, right? But that is very difficult to swallow there. But again, that's what we keep telling people. I'm like, you know, this is the guy that you won in the tournament, even though this particular hand is burns your toast. So
wow, that's incredibly crazy. I mean, and then so we, I mean, I guess we got away for the least amount. I don't know what happened if he had checked, if this guy checks again, making the straight or not. I don't think so. Now I think he wants to bet for value. So I don't know what he bets on the river, but we probably got away for the least amount because if we had checked behind on the turn and then he bets, he probably would have bet around what we bet, 800, and we would have probably called. So it's probably 6 of 1, half dozen of the other, what we would have lost in this hand. But That's crazy. That's crazy. 4-5 off, out of position in a small blind to a raise. That's man. That's why it's a $3 sit and go and not, you know, $500. You know, buy-in at the local casino. Man, that's unbelievable. So is that all he said, or is there anything else?
Yeah, no, I mean, he essentially said, villain turning over 4 or 5 offs who left me pretty tilted, but I don't want to be too results-oriented about the hand. I would love to know your guys' thoughts on how I played the turn. I felt that checking back the turn was just too weak and would have left me open to a really tough river decision with 4 cards to straighten the board. Also, my overpair was ahead of a lot of the small blinds range on the turn. Well, kind of...
Well, we kind of talked about that, but the other thing I thought about, too, what he just said, you know, you might have folded on the end, and you would have saved even more money. That's the thing. You know, I'm not saying that, like, we're talking about results-oriented, so, but think about it. If you check behind, then the 3 comes. Now it's like, okay, well, any 8, and now this guy's betting out, and then you might actually believe it. And, of course, it ended up being 4-5, too, so you don't know that that's not in his range. Could have been 4-5 suited as a blind holder. And then, you know, you're just thinking, okay, this guy's chip leader, he's going to try to steal it from me later, and that's why he bet that. But you could have come to the decision at the end and folded, and then you would have saved that 800, you know. But I don't think it's weak checking behind on the turn. I really don't.
No, I thought we did a pretty good job explaining why it's in that situation it's not weak. I mean, sometimes it might be, but, you know, it's a tough spot to be in anyhow, because you're up against a small blind with a board that hits a small blind pretty hard, right? Kept hitting the small blinds range pretty hard. But you had a decent hand. You don't want to be spooked out of it. So you just got to take some chances at some point to minimize risk and again, as we said, maximize value. So, you know, if that trade doesn't come, that would have been a nice pot against somebody who had no business being in this pot, right?
Yeah, so, you would have been almost a chip leader at that point, probably. So. But you know what, Russ? The bad hands will come, but over the long haul, you know that you're going to beat this guy way more than he's going to beat you. So take that with a little grain of salt.
Absolutely.
I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.
I don't see much reason to bet here. Sorry.
What are you doing? It's a new O'Malley's move.
I screwed up.
I'll have to edit that out for you. I might put that at the end of the show for Rick to listen to. The Easter egg that he can't find because he forgot that they were there.
Oh, my God. I was trying to sand some chips then. I got lost. All right. Here we go. It's time for the Vance. Oh my God.